service, and his topic is the Apostle Paul's last work. The Apostle Paul's last work. Brother Tim.
Good afternoon. There are some of you I haven't gotten around yet to greet personally, so I'm looking forward to doing that. We're happy to be here, and we bring you the warm Christian love and greetings of those back at home, especially at the retirement center, who could not make the trip. The Apostle Paul ended his life in prison. And as we understand it, there were actually two imprisonments. The first one, if historians are accurate, happened around AD 60. And perhaps he was in prison for a couple of years. Then they think that he was released for perhaps a year, and then imprisoned a second time. The two imprisonments are the two parts of our story. They had a completely different character. The first one was not that bad a time, even though he was, quote, imprisoned, unquote. But he was almost there of his own making. You remember what happened in the 26th chapter of Acts? Paul said, I appeal to Caesar. Now, at that time, Caesar was Nero. Paul knew exactly what he was saying. He was, in fact, appealing to a madman, one who one day would be one thing and the next day something else. But Paul wanted to go to Rome. He felt that there was a work there, and that was not, he had never gotten that far to the west. In the 28th chapter of Acts, in verse 30, the book of Acts ends by talking about Paul's imprisonment there. And one translation says that Paul was in his own rented lodging. That's a little different than the typical Roman prison or dungeon. So in this case, we see that we might call it today house arrest. Something like that, where Paul was waiting for trial, but it wasn't like being in the dungeon. And from that little headquarters, Paul did a lot of work. He had the brethren come and meet with him. He taught them. Not only did the Jews come to him, but also in Rome, Gentiles. And at that time, Rome was the center of the Roman Empire. So there were people there from France. There were people there from Spain, from Africa. It was a microcosm of the entire Roman Empire. And this gave Paul a lot of joy, this teaching there. The students were eager, and he also had his friends there. Timothy was there with him, Epaphroditus, and certainly Luke. The associates would come and go. Paul would send them off with messages. They'd come back. They'd bring him greetings. It was a time of high energy, high activity. And another advantage was that Paul finally had time, he was forced to sit down, and he finally had time to write some letters. What is interesting, and one of the points that we're going to emphasize later, is that probably Paul wrote 8 letters while he was imprisoned here in these last 2 years. That's half of his letters. So half of his letters came from this rather short time period at the end of his life. So let's trace some of these last letters. Probably the largest class outside of the Jerusalem area was probably Ephesus. This would be in Turkey. And you remember that Paul visited there on his second missionary journey. He left Priscilla and Aquila there in Ephesus. And on his third missionary journey, Paul stayed there himself 3 years. Now, for someone who was moving like Paul all the time, that was a long stay. And in some respects, you might say that Ephesus was as close to a home ecclesia probably as Paul had, moving as he did. So in this letter, and perhaps this was, I'm just going to take some poetic license and say, this may have been the first letter that Paul wrote when he was there in prison. But he covers the whole mystery of our calling. And if there's one word that repeats as you go through the book of to the Ephesians, the word might be walk. Because you remember, as you go through the different chapters, Paul talks about walk. He says, you used to walk this way in the second chapter. And he talks about walking in love, chapter 5. Walking in unity, chapter 4. Walking in humility, 5:21. He talks about the marriage. He's talking a lot about our behavior. He talks about parenting, being a children, being an employee, being an owner. And if you trace back how Paul got to Rome, you remember that he was in the Jerusalem area, he was in Palestine when he appealed to Caesar. And where was he before that? He was up north in Asia Minor. And you remember he had this compulsion to go back to Jerusalem. And it was at Ephesus that one of the prophets there said, don't go to Jerusalem, because they will bind you there and take you prisoner. And you remember that it was in the Ephesus area that Paul called for the elders to come to him. He was out at the seashore with the boat at Miletus, and the elders came from Ephesus. I think a lot of the brethren came from Ephesus. Whoever could come came to say goodbye and greet Paul. And this brother made the prophecy that Paul would be imprisoned. They tried to convince him not to go to Jerusalem. Remember, he'd been part of their class for 3 years. And it says there that they wept. They put their arms around Paul and they wept when they said goodbye to him, because they had the feeling that they'd never see him again. Now, Paul had all those thoughts in his mind when he wrote this letter to the Ephesians. So there's a lot of love in this letter permeating what he wrote there. Now, the delivery of this letter was no trivial matter. Paul was in Rome. You didn't just go to the corner and drop it in the box and expect it to be delivered. So if it was important and you wanted something delivered, you basically in those days used a messenger. And Paul had a very faithful brother, Tychicus. I think there are approximately 10 different ways of pronouncing that dear brother's name, but I'll say Tychicus. And you'll see in a lot of our Bibles, it's a tradition, but the postscript after Ephesians 6:24 is that Tychicus delivered this letter from Paul to the brethren in Ephesus. Now, because the delivery was so expensive to get a letter from Rome to Turkey, Paul didn't want to see Tychicus go with just one letter. So it seems reasonable, if you'll give me a little poetic license again, that Paul wrote another letter to a very nearby class of Ephesus, and that would be Colossae. They were pretty close together. And it's a fun exercise to read quickly through Ephesians and then skip over and read quickly through Colossians. And you will see that phrase after phrase after phrase repeat. So I would say that what was on Paul's mind as he wrote the letter to the Ephesians and he finished that one and he started the one for Colossians had the same thoughts in his mind. It was the same week. Brethren were discussing the same things there in the class. So you'll see Colossians 1:26 talks about the mystery and the Gentiles being included. That's exactly what he said in the third chapter, verses 1 through 7, to the Ephesians. In Colossians 2, verses 13 and 14, he uses the phrase, "Even when we were dead in our sins, God hath quickened us together with Christ." Well, that's exactly what he said to the Ephesians in the second chapter, verses 1 and 5. Same words. Colossians 2:19 and Ephesians 4:16, he uses the analogy of the joints being knit together. It goes on and on. As you read through the two books, you will see repeated phrase after repeated phrase. In this book to the Colossians in chapter 4, Paul mentions Tychicus. And in this is the fourth chapter, verse 8. He says, "I'm not going to tell you about how I'm doing personally. Tychicus will tell you." Tychicus will give you a full report. And he closes and asks them to remember his bonds, his imprisonment. Now, toward the end of this letter, actually in this fourth chapter, there are some interesting things. In verses 15 and 16, fourth chapter of Colossians, Paul gives the instruction that the letters be passed around. And you see that this is the beginning of Paul's writings being passed. I don't think he had any idea how long the passing of the letters would go on for almost 2,000 years. But we see that Paul had in his mind a little bigger audience than just the ecclesias in the city. And in verse 15, he says, "Salute the brethren in Laodicea." That was about 10 miles away from Colossae. And in verse 16, I like this, it says, "When the epistle is read among you, cause that it also be read in the church of Laodicea." And likewise, this is the kind of the mind-boggling one, "Likewise, you read the epistle that I wrote to the Laodiceans." The what? The epistle to the Laodiceans. So that's kind of fun. See, I think that's the third letter he wrote. Paul says, Tychicus is going there to Turkey. Okay, first I got to write to my friends in Ephesus. Oh yeah, how about right next door to Colossae? I don't dare write to the Colossians without writing to the Laodiceans. So where is that letter? You know, if there's any letter we could really use, it's the one to the Laodiceans. I think that letter is in the bottom of some cave somewhere in Turkey. Okay, don't give up hope. I think they're going to find that manuscript. Because we need that letter. We need that letter to the Laodicean church. Tychicus was going to deliver all three of these letters. Now also there, in verse 9, is the mention of the brother Onesimus. And Onesimus came from Colossae. Because I think he says there, Onesimus, who is one of yours. Meaning from the city of Colossae. And Onesimus is going to go along with Tychicus on the journey. Now, you remember who Onesimus was? Onesimus is the slave that is the subject of the writing to Philemon. Okay, Onesimus was a slave in Philemon's house in the city of Colossae. And somehow, Onesimus has worked his way to Rome and has since become a very trusted and beloved brother. It's exactly what Paul says. He says, our beloved brother Onesimus. Now, Paul kind of decided, I think, that Onesimus should go back to Colossae and settle the issue with Philemon, his owner, because he was a felon. I mean, this was a lawbreaker. Okay, Onesimus agrees to go back, but he's not happy about this. And I think he comes to Paul and he says, "Brother Paul, I'm afraid to go back to Colossae. I'm afraid to go there because Philemon is going to just tear me to pieces." And Paul says, "No, come on now. Philemon is a good friend of mine. I've been in his house. He's a good brother. You don't have to be afraid." Onesimus says, "Please, Brother Paul, would you write me a letter? Write me a short letter to Philemon and tell him to forgive me." Paul says, "You know, Timothy's gone. Okay, Onesimus, sit down. I'll dictate you the letter." And if you look at the letter to Philemon, in many of our Bibles at the end, it says that this was written by Onesimus. So, is another letter that the group is going to carry back to Turkey, to Asia Minor. And you remember how beautifully Paul explained the situation, used all this, the concepts of spiritual salesmanship. And I think this is kind of a sweet little story, because Onesimus is the slave, he's the lawbreaker, and if there's anybody who could relate to him, it's Paul, who's a prisoner. I mean, socially they had the same status at that point in time. Paul was a prisoner, couldn't do what he wanted. Onesimus was runaway slave in danger of also being imprisoned. So Paul writes, and you see these words, he says, "Paul," this is in Philemon verse 1, "a prisoner, not of Rome, but a prisoner of Jesus Christ, and Timothy our brother, unto Philemon our dearly beloved and fellow laborer." And you remember how he explains the situation, and I think Onesimus carried that letter personally. He didn't want that letter lost if he had to go back and face Philemon. So we've got four letters at this point being carried to the east by Tychicus and Onesimus. There are some other letters. I'm not exactly sure why they were written. The next one perhaps was to northern Greece. And this was the first class that Paul established in Macedonia. And this is Philippi. And Paul can remember that, meeting Lydia, the incident. Again, prison. Talk about prisoner experiences. Paul was in prison there. Remember the jailer was converted? Paul remembers all that as he writes this letter to the Philippians. And here's another love letter. We see the love in the book of Ephesus to the Ephesians. We see the love in the letter to Philemon. We see the love in the letter to the Philippians. And remember, when Paul was in prison, the Philippians sent him many things. They didn't just send him their love. They sent him clothing, they sent him food, they sent him scripts. That's really something. There's a little lesson there for us. It's too easy to just say, "Send your love." It's better to do something. Do your love. And also in this letter to the Philippians, we see another comment about what was going on at this time period in the church. 4 chapter, verses 21 and 22, we see that the truth has worked its way into Caesar's palace. That's pretty incredible. And I bet you Paul had a lot to do with that, with his ability to teach and the excitement and the spiritual vitality that he brought to that Roman ecclesia. And he says there that that they too, of Caesar's household, send you their love and greetings. That was a miracle. In the middle of that heathenness, in the middle of that pornography that was going on in Rome, that there was truth working its way in amongst some of those people. These are things that were accomplished in Paul's imprisonment. These were heady times. These were glorious times. Another letter was written to the Jews. The letter to the Jews. Now that was a pretty broad audience. The letter would need to be circulated. But as Paul looked back on, I would suspect, 25 years of consecrated life, the biggest battle he had was the Judaizers, the ones that kept telling the brethren, and these weren't outsiders, this was part of the fellowship, that they had to keep the law. And Paul, in city after city, did battle with these people. And they got violent. They were responsible for some of his physical stoning and some of his beatings. So he writes his epistle to the Jews. And you know how he goes back in Old Testament history. We call it the letter to the Hebrews. But I don't know if they went around calling each other Hebrews back then. I think they were Jews. It was Jews and Gentiles. So anyway, he went back and quoted from the Psalms. And he starts comparing Jesus. He compares Jesus to the angels. He compares Jesus to Moses. He compares Jesus to how much better. And everything is better. Jesus is better than the angels. Jesus is better than Moses. Jesus is better than the Melchizedek setup. Everything is a comparison about Jesus and how it's better. That was his message to the Jews. And you remember, as he gets to the end of the letter in chapter 13, verse 1, again, he talks about love. And he says, let brotherly love continue. Now, it seems at this point that we've had 6 letters from the Roman prison. 4 going to Turkey, 1 to northern Greece, and 1 to the Jews. And in Hebrews 13, verse 23, Paul says that he'll probably see the brethren again. So again, this imprisonment, if you're going to give it a color, it was not a gray or a dark color. This imprisonment had a lot of light to it. This was a pretty good 2 years. And in Philemon, verse 22, he says to Philemon, prepare me a place to stay. Paul expects at this point to be released. He says to the Philippians, so let me back up. Not only is he going to see the Jews, wherever they are, it could be Judea, could be Palestine, but he writes to Philemon, Turkey, that he's going to go through Turkey. And then if you look in Philippians 2:24, he says, I trust that I'm going to come myself and see you shortly. So he's talking about one big pilgrim trip. He's going to go up to northern Greece. He's going to go to Turkey. He's going to see the Jews in Judea. So he expects to be released and go out and do what he had done before, which was travel, organize classes, get the brethren together. So apparently at this time, the first imprisonment ends. Historians suspect that it was in this period of release that he wrote the letter to Titus. When he writes to Titus, he mentions being in Macedonia, in one of the northern cities there, Nicopolis. And in Titus 3:2, he mentions Tychicus again. So that's kind of on his mind. And he says he's going to spend the winter there in Macedonia. Well, again, the historians tell us that right then and there in Macedonia, Paul was arrested for the second time and brought back to Rome. Now, this would have been around AD 63, 64, and Nero was having trouble politically. He was losing control, and like a lot of politicians do, they look for a scapegoat, and for Nero, it was the Christians. And it was at this point in time that the persecutions, the physical persecutions, really started to come against the church. This is when they would take Christians, not only beat them, not only kill them, but they made sport of them. They would take them into the arenas, and this is where the Christians started to be not only burnt at the stake and things like that, but it got serious. This is when Paul was imprisoned the second time. There was no crowd around him this time. He was pretty much alone. The local ecclesia had been decimated. Those who were still alive either left town or were driven underground. And there was no time to write a lot of letters. There was no time to do much of anything. So Paul wrote one last letter. And I don't know if Paul knew it was his last letter. I think he did. But even if he didn't, he would have wanted this to be his last letter. And this one was written to his beloved son, Timothy. And the postscript in many of our Bibles after 2 Timothy 4:22 says, "Letter written from Rome when Paul was brought before Nero the second time." We might say the last time. You know, Paul didn't have a family. He gave all that up for the truth's sake. So when he calls Timothy his son, he meant that in several different ways. He had a tremendous emotional bond with this young man who had helped him for so many years. And it was also in 2 Timothy 1:6 that Paul laid his hands on Timothy. And probably it was then that Timothy was filled with the Spirit. So Paul thinks back of all the battles that he had gone through. You know, and if you wanted to think of how would you characterize Paul's consecrated life, it was a fighter. He was just constantly fighting. He was in trouble all the time, especially with the Judaizers. And so he says to Timothy, "Keep up the fight, Timothy. Endure hardness. Strive for control, but do it lawfully. Don't be afraid to suffer for Christ. Rightly divide the word." This is the dying apostle telling his son the last instructions. And Paul was alone here. We see chapter 4, verse 10, 2 Timothy. He says, "Demas hath forsaken me. Others he had sent to other places. Tychicus, we know, went back to Ephesus. Titus, he sent to Dalmatia, which we would call Yugoslavia today. And Luke was the only one left. Luke, the physician, stayed with Paul." I think at this point in Paul's life, he was thinking about seeing the Lord. And I think he thought about the first time he ever met the Lord. And that was on the road to Damascus. And he thought about the tremendous change that took place in his life. What a character he was before that. Then he met the Lord. And this miracle took place. And this young man who was just, he was such a fighter. But now he was going to be filled with the Spirit and he was going to fight for the Lord. So he must have thought of all those things, the confrontations he had, the ecclesias he began and started and nurtured. And he says in 2 Timothy 4:6, "I'm ready. I am ready to be offered. The time of my departure is at hand. I have fought. I have fought," he says. He says, "I've fought a good fight." And he says, "I think I finished the race course." He could see the end in sight. And he says to Timothy, "Give my special greetings to Priscilla and Aquila." This is so cute. You know what the tie was there? Not only the truth, but they were tent makers 30 years ago. And you know that bond is still there. If you're a carpenter and that brother's a carpenter, you got a special bond. If you play the trombone and that brother plays the trombone, you got a special bond. With Paul, it was the old tent makers. The old tent makers, Priscilla, Aquila, and Paul. So he says, "Give them my love, Timothy." And he hopes, not that he can get out, but he hopes that Timothy can come and see him. Don't think it happened. Now, in closing, I'd like to suggest 5 or 6 lessons that we can extract from this saga of Paul's last 2 or 3 years. Number 1, do you see how much you can accomplish in 2 or 3 years? What Paul did in those 2 or 3 years, it's lasted almost 2,000 years. Don't think just because you have a short time period, you can't do something significant for the Lord. You can accomplish a lot in 2 or 3 years. Number two, there are definitely time periods in our life when we can work, and there's definitely time periods in our life when we cannot work. Night will come for you personally when no man can work. Number three, Paul was in prison. Brethren, we're all in prison. One way or another, some of us are in economic prison and we can't do what we'd like to do. Some of us are in physical prison. Some of us are in family prisons. Some of us are in personality prisons. And it doesn't let us. It constrains us. It holds us back. Don't use that excuse for not doing something. Paul worked even when he was in prison. Number four, Paul's work changed greatly. And if there's one point that really sticks in my mind out of this study as I look it over at this time, this is the one. Paul's work changed. For the first 25 years or so of his consecrated life, what was he? He was an evangelist. He was an organizer. He was a builder. He was a fighter. He was a traveler. All over that known world. Organizing things. He was moving from place to place. Incredible. You know that in those 25 years, he only wrote 8 letters? He only wrote 1 letter every 3 years on the average. That's like me. My friends will tell you that. Yeah, he writes a letter every 5 years. If you write him a letter, don't expect to get an answer. That was before the days of email. I'm a little better now on email. So for 25 years, Paul was not much of a writer. He wrote when there was a problem. But starting with his imprisonment, the point is his work changed. And he was from one place, a teacher and a writer. The same thing can happen to us. We can do one thing a part of our lives, whether it's when we're young or whatever, and the work will change. Maybe we were an evangelist, and we're not anymore. Maybe we were an organizer, and we're not anymore. Maybe we're doing something that looks less dynamic. You think that's what Paul thought? You think maybe he thought that he would love more to be going around to all the classes and organizing and even fighting the Judaizers? But do you see how important the prison work was? Maybe he didn't know it, but it lasted 2,000 years. More than even those little classes he established back then. So maybe the Lord has something for us that's important too, and we don't realize it. Now when you think of this work is going to change, there's one more thought that is inescapable. And that is that as the stages of our life change, we will come to a point when we can do no work. Through frailty or sickness. Many of our brethren have come to that point. And this is the most difficult change of all. Stephanie Drobny comes to mind. You think Stephanie didn't want to be at this convention? Stephanie would travel all over the world and go to conventions. That work in her life has changed. I think of Hannah and Ruth. Do you remember the old days of the Seattle Convention? Who was it that kept those conventions going? Well, it was the sisters here in Seattle. Edith and Rosie and Gertie and Hannah and Ruth. I don't think we'd be here today if those sisters didn't keep that work going. How can you forget the salmon dinner added on top of it? But the work has changed for her. I think of my dad. Evangelist, organizer, builder. Work has changed. So, to those who have come to that phase, I have a word of encouragement for you. You have no idea what an encouragement your life still is to us. We think of your life of sacrifice. We think of all the things you did. And all we have to do is look at you and we get strength. That's all we have to do. We just have to look at you and we get strength. So don't fret. Don't be frustrated because your work has changed. Just stand there and smile to us. And we just suck in the spiritual energy. It's a change that most of us will have to go through. The last, I think this is number 5 in Paul's lessons. It's in every letter, and it's love. Let brotherly love continue. Every one of those last letters. And remember John 13:35. This is the quality that distinguishes us as Christians. That we love one another. That's number 1. It's in Paul's farewell sermons. I suspect that Paul's experience is a microcosm of the entire church. The last days of the church. There's a period of great activity, and then it is followed by a shorter period of restriction, and then finally death. I think the entire church movement, as we're in the last days of the harvest, will experience those kinds of feelings. Right now, I'd say, yeah, we're in prison, but it's pretty exciting prison. We are evangelizing over the world. We are organizing. We are building. But I expect for the next phase to come too. Remember Paul's closing words to Timothy, 2 Timothy 4:18. They show that Paul never lost his confidence. And he says, even though he was in the Roman prison with no hope of getting out this time, the Lord will rescue me from every evil attack, and will bring me safely to his heavenly kingdom. To him be glory forever and ever. The Lord be with your spirit. Grace be with you. So may they be your words also, dear brethren, as you finish your work in running for the prize of the high calling.